G'day. Coming up in my culture story, I give a sneak preview into a paper or a seminar I'm giving at Geoscience Australia next week. In this paper, I'm looking at mapping country from a Western perspective and a traditional owner perspective. Well, enough. Hope you enjoy it.
Oi. Nana Pita, call it a podcast, go.
G'day. Welcome back to My Culture Story. Pala na, ko arenga tuma nava map ko ngorara ko ngore wanalgo. So this podcast, I'm giving some insight into mapping and understanding how there's this distinction between a Western way of documenting country and a culturally grounded Aboriginal way. Talking for my country, of course. There are many different ways that Aboriginal people relate to country in that abstraction, which is a map. And these are just some thoughts and insights from my country. So I will be giving a seminar at Geoscience Australia on Wednesday the 10th of May. And this seminar, the title is Culturally Grounded Mapping for Country, TEK, Traditional Ecological Knowledge, Science and Technology. And basically what I'm talking about, so the abstract, is there are many technological advances in remote sensing, mapping, data acquisition, and there's also analysis using new tools like machine learning, artificial intelligence. You've all heard of the ChatGPT and other digital mapping models. And the big issue with a lot of these is that these are tools that are designed and developed coming out of Western science, grounded both theoretically but methodologically in Western science. And then, of course, the purpose for that is applied to what the needs are from a Western perspective, whether it's ecological restoration, mapping for environmental purposes, or mapping for economic purposes, mapping for defense purposes. There's this whole range of different mapping uses, which largely revolves around the same set of data, but the tools for analysis are different. So, historically, Western science built a mapping system, and, oh my goodness, if you go right into it, you go back to, you know, flat Earth. Basically, starting from flat Earth, that's where Western knowledge was. And through these iterations of discovery and voyage and absorption of other knowledge systems, Western science has evolved into what it is today, which is, you know, an interstellar mapping experience. Aboriginal mapping systems, though, is at the end of the day, you realise you end up on in the same platform or direction, but often we get there from different angles and different perspectives. So Aboriginal mapping, as I understand it from my experience as a, you know, born and bred within the Western Desert culture and the Ngalia knowledge systems, it's a relationship with country, and it maps these relationships out. So the relationship is mediated through some of our institutional structures. One of the big institutional structures, of course, is the skin groups. There are other structures that are spiritually grounded through the dreaming, experientially grounded, access to resource grounded. So there's a number of different ways in which these relationships are mapped out. And so in understanding country, we come from a basis that we have a direct spiritual, emotional, and biological relationship with that country. And that's only country. We do have similar mapping of celestial objects as well as stuff that's under the ground. And the difference between the divergence between Western science and an indigenous knowledge system, so I'm sort of generalizing that, but it's based on the particular knowledge that I have of my country and my experience, is that Western science rejected religion quite earlier on in the piece, largely because of the oppressive nature of religion in knowledge production during the, you know, the Middle Ages, during the Renaissance, those sort of episodes, those events. Aboriginal knowledge is firmly grounded on religion, on the spiritual dimension, and is informed through that lens, so that our engagement with that knowledge is in a ceremonial form, in ritual form, in design, in art, and the production of that knowledge is to support mnemonic or memory devices, memory aids. And so our mapping of country, well, our mapping of the metaverse, is built or grounded on this spiritual plane or the spiritual dimension. And how that then becomes embodied and imbued in an individual, into a group, and then how do we interact with the metaverse around us that includes the physical and the spiritual and intangible and tangibles. Therein lies one of the points of conflict. Western science is granular, it's particularized, and at its very core, the basis is a rejection of the spiritual domain. I know some people might dispute that, but that's how I understand the emergence of Western knowledge in the period coming out of the dominance of the church and the Renaissance and the flourishing of knowledge and the borrowing of knowledge from other traditions, the extraction of knowledge from other traditions. So there are multiple domains there. And so in this paper that I'm going to present, I want to paint a picture both of this esoteric conflict. Then there's the practical application of all of that in the discovery and domination of country, people, and resources. And historically, that has been the experience of us as First Nations peoples who are traditional owners of country. Each time there is an interaction between the cartographers, the mappers, and our country, our culture, and our people, it's built around a project to extract our resources, or a project to dominate our political institutions and social institutions, and to marginalise us, and to generate economic benefit and return. And for a long time, as an activist on the ground, I saw institutions like Geological Survey of Western Australia, Geoscience Australia, the Army mapping, which occurred probably in the 1950s after Len Bedell put in a lot of those outback routes like the Gun Barrel Highway, the Connie Sue, Ann Bedell, those sort of highways. It was coming into that the blank spaces on the maps of Australia started to be filled in. Just jumping back, this is an exercise of imperialism and colonial expansion around the globe. Columbus took a gamble. And I wonder how much of a gamble it was, because Spain had just only recently liberated itself from the Moors, the Islamic civilization that had occupied Spain for so many years. And I'm sure there were still vestiges of Islamic knowledge still available to the Catholic communities that reclaimed the Spanish territories. And so, you know, I think there's probably a lot of borrowing going on there, or expropriation. But anyway, so that was the first voyage of discovery out of Europe. Captain Cook's voyage across to into the South was particularly an exercise around mapping. He came out here to, I can't remember what those things, the latitudes and longitudes, I keep getting confused on the ones that go up and down. But his journey was really to go to the opposite end of the earth from Greenwich and make some observations of the transition of Venus, which happens every 120, 130 years or thereabouts, against the sun. And so he came across, so Captain Cook was essentially a voyage of discovery, and mapping was a core part of it. So that did not end well for us. The observations from the scientific journey went back to England, become part of the settlement and occupation of Australia, and the development emergence of terra nullius and the denial of our existence. So we were written out of the legal system as well as the society up until quite recently. And so there were the mapping the coastlines, but then the early explorers, each one of these explorers was an exercise in mapping routes, mapping resources, and starting with a blank page and filling it up. So that's been a project that's been ongoing. And very little of that project acknowledged or recognized the Indigenous knowledge, Indigenous ways of knowing that goes into that process, apart from potentially place names, following the trails. Blaxland, Wentworth and Lawson went across the Dividing Range, or the Darling Range, Blue Mountains, following the trails of Aboriginal people. Very little, and each one of those explorers had an Aboriginal guide. The Aboriginal guide acted as an ambassador, mediator, but also the local knowledge on where to go, where to access water resources, and travel safe. So mapping is a colony, a project around the expansion or expression of power and dominance. And it continued to be an active process of dominating Aboriginal people. So today, summing all that up, jump over into today, we're going into a new age of projects, some, quite exciting projects around drone mapping, AI, remote sensing. Geoscience Australia has just completed a aerial magnetic survey of vast tracts of Australia. And it's just going along happy way, putting that knowledge and that information out into the public domain. I, as a traditional owner and a native title holder, we had some concerns about the flyovers, and we entered into some agreements with Geological Survey and Geoscience Australia about these flyovers on our country, particularly impacts on nesting seasons for emus and potentially culturally sensitive areas, etc. And then it dawned on us, as we're starting to look at the results, that what these projects do is they expose our country. They open these doors to the world to show what's buried in our land. Things that we have stories for, things that we have a relationship with. And the only protection we have from anyone, from a small prospector to a multinational oil and gas company, coming onto our land and identifying the resources that geoscience has, graciously contributed to the world, the only protection we have is native title access, exclusive possession. Very, very weak form of protection of our country. Very, very weak form of controlling development agenda, or managing and participating in it as well. So these are the parameters. And essentially, what we're looking for is a way that we can have this knowledge available, because it's good, it's exciting, it's interesting stuff. But there's a narrow space between exploitation and extraction and knowledge of mankind. So that's one issue. And then, of course, the analysis and the interpretation of these knowledge systems, of this data that's being generated and collected, we've got to be careful on how it's framed. Machine learning is being adapted. What is the input, the knowledge systems, the biases, the language that goes into training a machine learning application or an AI application? I'm pretty sure that I could probably say I'm 99.99% sure there's very little traditional ecological knowledge, very little tjokoropa, dreaming stories, very little kinship-based relationships are being fed into these AI programs. And that's the challenge that we hold as traditional owners, First Nations peoples, cultural custodians of knowledge and country, in interacting with the scientific community, who are looking at taking these data sets, using it for recapitalization through natural capital, nature credits, carbon credits, accessing white hydrogen, clean energy production. There's a whole suite of ways in which data is being of country and processes are being captured, analysed and represented into the commercial domain. My goodness, this podcast is probably going a little bit longer than I normally do, but what I've shared with you is capturing some of the thoughts that I have at the moment. And instead of having it as a rambling, I've got to present it into a within the disciplinary framework of a seminar, a present PowerPoint maybe, and a possible paper. And this is an emerging area. We have ranger teams out all across the desert country who are doing our projects, mapping where our country is, mapping our water holes, mapping our animals, all those sort of things, using some of the technologies, not always having an ownership over the data and the production. And we just got to be careful. We've got to make sure that cultural permissions are in place. We've got to make sure that the inherent bias of Western science to extract knowledge is ameliorated or reduced and done in a way that actually builds in a methodology for empowering traditional knowledge holders and their knowledge systems. And that's the big challenge, because resourcing and access to intellectual capital is largely controlled by a journeyway through universities, through scientific communities, through establishments like that. And the same amount of resourcing is not and has never been invested into the intellectual, scientific and cultural traditions of one of the oldest knowledge systems on Earth. All right, I'll leave it at that. I think that's enough food for thought on this emerging and complex but continuous metaphysical and physical dialogue between knowledge systems. Balana? Ngola nyako. And keep an eye out for, I'll put the link on this podcast for my seminar. Okay. Balana ngola nyako.